Gillian Shepherd, now Baroness Shepherd of Northwold. I was Education Secretary from 1994 to 1997 and have been in the House of Lords since 2005.
Thank you. Did you love or hate history when you were at school?
I loved history.
What did you love about it?
Oh, well, I think it was the narrative. I loved the stories. I was in a generation of children who were really turned on by historical fiction. My absolute favourite book from the time I was about 8 until 10 was A Traveller in Time by Alison Nutley. I was obsessed by the Tudor period, and I was certainly not alone in that. And just adored going to museums and old houses and imagining myself as the traveller in time.
Was that something that school helped you with, or was it a natural sort of liking?
I think school did help, but I had an outsized imagination. I was rather a literary and literate child. And, you know, rather liked the costumes.
When you were working in education as a teacher and then as an inspector, can you remember how history was regarded as a subject in school then?
Very importantly, history was up there with English and maths. It was certainly considered that you were not educated if you had not mastered, really, as it were, the chronology of at least British history, some European history, obviously the United States. It was rather like literacy.
So the schools that you were visiting, a range of secondary schools, did you think that the state of history was good in those schools in Norfolk?
I wasn't primarily inspecting history. We had advisors who were doing that. I began to feel, certainly began to feel, towards the end of the 60s that we were getting far too much into blurring edges, project work, transforming your primary school into a Viking boat, which was confusing for teachers and everybody alike, in the hope that children would understand. It was so misconceived that. It was so misconceived because it went over the top, that whole approach, in the hope that children would be able to pick out, you know, maths from adding up the sizes of Viking boats. It was a nonsense. And it was imposed on teachers really by fashion more than training, I think. And I used often to go into primary schools because in Norfolk, of course, many of them were very isolated. There were only two members of staff and nobody much to exchange ideas with. Seated in despair before the latest issue of Teacher's World, you know, saying, this week you are a Saxon farmyard and you have to do the following things. You know, I just think there was an unnecessary blurring of the edges, which, while admirable, if people had had the time and the training to understand what was behind it and get it right, actually succeeded in probably the non-education of a whole generation of children.
So when you entered Parliament, it was just before the introduction of the national curriculum.
Yes, it was. Yes.
What did you think of the national curriculum when it was first implemented in schools?
Well, what I thought was, regardless of what was actually in it, it was very, very good thing that somebody had sat down and thought, what ought children to know at the end of their schooling? Because I had seen, as I say, the sort of dismantling and disintegration of the narrative, since we're talking about history, of history. So that children had no sense of the way events succeeded one another. I'm not a historian, this will be very obvious to anybody hearing these words, but I have never understood ever how people can expect children and young people to be able even remotely to begin to interpret events, to take a broader view, if they don't have the framework. I've no doubt this will be pointed out as a massive limitation on my point, on my part, but that is how I've always seen it. But the other very important thing is that such an approach confused teachers who had more than one thing to do in a day, not least in very small primary schools, you know, like to clean the floors and serve them meals and deal with first aid and everything else. And they didn't deserve it. And therefore, some lost heart, some got muddled, and the result was a losing sight of the excitement of the narrative of history, I think.
So did you think the national curriculum brought that back into
focus? I never actually, when I was a backbencher, studied, you know, what... are we all right there?
Yes.
Yes. Never particularly studied what was in the national curriculum. I think Ken Baker was the Secretary of State at the time, and he was immensely enthusiastic, I think, about having a fairly conventional approach towards history. I was so busy doing other things, and eventually became a Social Security Minister, then a Treasury Minister. I really did not have time to do all this. The idea of having a curriculum seemed to me to offer security to teachers and a kind of professional confidence that I thought could only benefit children. However, what I do know is, of course, because when I became Secretary of State, there would undoubtedly have been the most appalling rows about what you meant by history and what should be in and what should be out and how you approached it. Because although there were not those rows specifically on history in my time as Secretary of State, there were similar rows on science and maths. So, you know, I assume that all of those took place in history. And I have a terrible feeling that the rows practically abolished geography. But you know, I don't know about that in detail.
It seems to be the clash between the politicians representing a sort of public viewpoint and the professional interests who want to preserve, if you like, control over the subject. Some of these battles, do you think they're about that?
This is very difficult because you must respect the professionals. They are passionate about what they're doing, and they have spent their lives doing it. And you do need their view on depth in a curriculum. You also need their view on approach and historical method. I'm sure of that. But actually, if you pare all of that away, and that is important, and it is included, and you know, should be included. In the end, what people need, I think, is a sense of the succession of events. I really cannot accept that it is not useful to have that.
So what were the key issues relating to the national curriculum when you were appointed Secretary of State?
Oh, well, I think they were mostly, the rows were about... As far as I can remember, because I never kept diaries, I think they were mostly about maths and science. I don't remember any about history. I really do not remember. I suspect there were,
yes,
but I can't remember.
Well, coming out of the dispute over SAPS, really, wasn't it, at the time? That it occurred
possibly
just before you came into office. Can you remember what the maths and science disputes were about?
Oh, yes. I certainly can. Because... there was a lot of concern from the universities that they were going to have to lengthen maths degree courses because young people were going in with, they considered, an insufficient grounding in order to be able to do an Oxford maths course, for example, which is indeed now 4 years. And I can remember discussing this with Adrian Smith, who after all is a mathematical economist, and he was at the time at Imperial. And I said, look, this is really very worrying, and I want you to really tell me, because he'd got a girl of his own daughter of doing A-level. And he said, I mustn't get this wrong. He said, look, when I went to university to do maths, I'd done something like maths, further maths, pure maths, blind maths, physics. So I was sort of well on in, you know, in the university degree course. My daughter is doing maths, yes, but she's also doing, you know, say, geography, music, whatever. And she will be a more rounded person, have a more rounded approach than perhaps I had, and therefore more able to cope with today's world. And the disputes were about that kind of thing. In the 60s, of course, we had the dispute about the method of teaching maths when Nuffield maths were introduced. And that had to be done, obviously it had to be done. But I can remember now how we had to do it. We had to go out to schools and, you know, supply the materials, and our maths advisors had to teach teachers how to approach maths. And I always felt, you know, we de-skilled probably a whole generation of primary maths teachers who had been teaching number work, as they called it, very well indeed. You know, tables, handling of figures, all of this kind of stuff, only to find that, you know, they were having to discuss with children the fourness of four. And we de-skilled them. I've never forgotten that lesson, never, which is why I started by saying what I did, you know, about history. If you confuse teachers with conflicting messages through the curriculum and through training, you will not get a good result.
Thank you. On reflection from the vantage point of 2009, has it been a good thing for education to have a prescribed national curriculum covering a range of subjects rather than a core curriculum, which the Prime Minister and some ministers wanted at the time?
Well, I think so, but I'm 69. And that is how I see things. I just think that it is extremely useful for individuals to have a good grounding in a range of subjects which I would call general knowledge. I think it's extremely useful. I do not think that it should be so prescriptive and so time consuming that there isn't space for teachers and children to explore other areas. We do have to remember, of course, that, you know, knowledge increases all the time at a rate of enormous rate. That is my generational point, I think. I do not see a way round getting teachers to deliver the goods unless they're pretty certain of what is expected of them.
But you do see the role for professional creativity as well?
Oh, yes, of course, absolutely. And the way that they teach history is obviously immensely important. But if they themselves are not quite clear when William the Conqueror came, you know, it is tricky for them.
To what extent do you think concerns about national identity or ethnic and social diversity issues at the moment should affect the history taught in schools?
Well, it must, mustn't it? It's now part of our general knowledge, our national cultural heritage. It's enormously important that people have wider views of cultural and ethnic issues than we had to have in the past. I mean, we are a different nation.
But how would you reflect that in the national curriculum?
There's a tremendous amount, isn't there, always written about Florence Nightingale and Mary Seacole, and, you know, this is the example that is always given. And I do think that it is important to reflect the viewpoints of different groups within our population. That is extremely important. I've always rather admired the French in the sense that they have never been bothered by these things, you know. This is French history and get on with it, and that's it, folks. I don't think that's good. I think that we do these things rather better, if painfully, argumentatively, with difficulty, and we sometimes get these stresses wrong. We really do. And we've had periods like that in forming the curriculum. Nevertheless, I think that it is only correct to try and to succeed as well as we can.
Thank you. Education is seen widely as an agent of change in society, particularly perhaps by politicians. What implications do you think that has for the curriculum, and in particular for the teaching of history?
Do you think you've got to be careful, haven't you? I think you've got to be very careful. You know, it is could certainly be have been advanced by a Nazi government and by a command economy government, and was. I'll never forget going to Russia just as Glasnost was breaking, both before and after, as it were, the dismantling. And people being taught that profit wasn't wrong. And somebody said to me, you know, we wouldn't have had any bother with teaching that profit was wrong after all these years if we'd still got the education system we had when we were teaching that it was wrong. But we haven't. And I thought, yes, exactly so. And I think, I don't think I want to say any more than that. That's...
Thank you. It's very illuminating.
Yeah, I've never forgotten it.
No, it is that contradiction.
Yes, it's very difficult for you, I said. Most difficult indeed.
Mm. Recently, organisations representing history teaching in schools have expressed concern about the downgrading of knowledge acquisition and specialist teaching in favour of the skills and competencies approach. And several of the various associations representing history teachers are very concerned about this. What's your view? Should skills...
I'm on their side.
Are you?
I am, because I don't think we've yet got... we may, of course. We may get to a position where people say, look, I know how to find out the answer, I don't need the knowledge. But I do think if you take that view, you remove, again, from children the pleasure of knowing about something. And you take from teachers again, you know, the certainty. And I come back to this chronological approach, or, you know, the sweep, the narrative of history. I think it's important, and if that's what the history teachers mean, I'm with them.
I think it's the concern, as you say, about privileging the development of something which can't actually be assessed. Are you a good team player? Are you flexible? Are you... good at learning.
Teachers never used to have a bother with this. I've never, in any way at all, read any report written of a child in the 60s and 70s and 80s. I do not recall teachers having a problem with this kind of assessment.
So it's something that should be incorporated into the subject.
But it always, you know, yes, I mean it is. Teachers always observe the way the children interact, the way they work together. You know, it's part of our approach in British education, not in French. Not in French. I mean, they give you the knowledge and you do what you want with it, so to speak. But, you know, I don't know. I cannot see how, in this country anyway, you can't be observing how children learn if you're teaching history to a class. You must notice who loves the narrative approach, who wants to go into other areas, who wants to compare this, you know, a period or an episode with things happening today, who says that wouldn't have happened today. I mean, could you teach without noticing this?
I think it's the issue about whether you subvert the subject curriculum to design it around fostering those particular things rather than fostering them within the subject.
I think it's all too difficult. I think it's making things too difficult for teachers again. I'm not trying to imply that they are unable to understand. Absolutely not. It merely is that life is difficult enough, and assessment of teachers is difficult enough for them to endure. Without having to worry. You see, this does go back, absolutely does go back to my point about modern maths. It really does, you know. If you moither people too much with too many things to think about while they're teaching, apart from a good professional approach, you will get less good teaching. You'll probably get fewer teachers as well.
That's very
it's very old-fashioned, yes. I'm afraid, but I reckon in the end, you know, if we all live to 100, it'll be right. Because one's seen it all before, that's the point. Not as Secretary of State, but in all my other jobs. I've seen all the fashions come and go.
So do you feel optimistic about education today?
If good sense can prevail, I do feel optimistic. But you really do have to let good sense prevail.
And that good sense lies with the politicians or with the teachers?
Well, wouldn't it be nice if we thought politicians had any good sense? It would be good. And that they didn't, you know, bow to media pressure.
That's a good place perhaps to finish. Thank you very much.